WUKY's Dr. Greg Davis on Medicine has the support of the Pain Treatment Center of the Bluegrass. The Pain Treatment Center specializes in acute and chronic pain management to help people live a pain-free life. More information at pain-ptc.com.
WUKY presents health news you can use. It's Dr. Greg Davis on Medicine.
Aphasia is a condition that affects the ability to communicate, often speech, but also the ability to understand both spoken and written language. I recently spoke with Dr. Timothy Anger, UK Neuropsychology Service Clinical Section and Assistant Professor of Neurology, also a faculty member at the Kentucky Neuroscience Institute, about aphasia and what we need to know. Tim, thank you very much for chatting with me again. It's been a while, and aphasia is in the news lately with the announcement that Bruce Willis is struggling with this disorder. Can you tell us what aphasia is to start?
Yeah, certainly. And let me say good morning. It's great to be back talking with you again. So aphasia, in its simplest definition, is a language disorder. It's a disorder of communication and language. It's really a reduced ability or a loss of the ability to produce or comprehend language. So there's a semantic argument in amongst the colleagues about whether or not aphasia versus dysphasia. So aphasia typically being understood to be the full loss or full absence of language, and then dysphasia because of its roots would mean sort of the partial loss of language. But essentially, it's a disorder where you either for some portion or completely lose the ability to understand what people are saying to you or how you can communicate with other people. And one of the great ways to conceptualize it is to think of having aphasia is sort of like living in a foreign country where you cannot speak or understand the language that's being used around you.
And are there forms of aphasia where an individual can understand language but just is unable to form speech?
Yes, there are multiple sort of subtypes of aphasias. When we talk about classifying aphasia, there's really sort of eight main classifications of aphasia, and then we break them down based on whether or not the individual's speech is fluent or non-fluent, and then beyond that, whether they have the ability to comprehend or not comprehend what's being spoken to them, and then also whether or not they have the ability to repeat what they're being told or not repeat what they're being told. So those are the eight core subcategories of aphasia that sort of fall under that umbrella of decision-making there.
What do we know about the cause or causes of this disorder?
Well, aphasia as a diagnosis really doesn't exist independently by itself. It's usually, this is not to say people don't have aphasia, they do, but it's usually symptomatic of some underlying concern or condition or cause because it pretty much correlates to something that's going on in your brain. So the most common cause of aphasia, the three leading causes are stroke, head injury, and brain tumor. But about one third of strokes result in some form of aphasia, and that's overarchingly the most leading cause of aphasia. That's more common for older adults than for younger adults. For younger adults, speech interruption comes from some type of head injury or a brain tumor, but you can also be afflicted with aphasia if you have some sort of cerebral or brain infection or if you have a neurodegenerative condition. So aphasia is usually representative of some sort of change to the speech and language centers in your brain, whether or not it be a change in blood flow or a blunt force trauma or something along those lines.
In pathology, we often wrestle with disease states that we call idiopathic, which just means we don't know what caused this particular disorder. Are there forms of aphasia as well where after all the diagnostic workup, you just don't know why?
It's certainly possible. And it's, you know, nothing is ever cut and dry as you would see it in the textbook. So sometimes when you're diagnosing the causes or the concerns, you get into the nitty gritty of what sub classification and type of aphasia a person may have, or the background history is unclear, or one of the other issues is there could be multiple concerns that could be contributing to why someone has an aphasia. So there are certainly instances where you're not 100% certain, but typically you can piece together from history, from report, from whatever has been going on with that individual, and from using our diagnostic tools, is come to a pretty common root cause of sort of how we ended up where we are.
And is the treatment for aphasia, I guess number one would be addressing the underlying cause, but is this where, like so many other disorders, you bring together a varied team of professionals to help?
Absolutely. So there is no cure for aphasia. It's not like you can take a pill or get an injection and then your aphasia goes away. But there are treatments that you can do to either, you know, help improve the concerns or adapt your lifestyle to sort of improve your quality of life and your communication abilities. So the first one would be, like you mentioned, managing the underlying concern. So if you have a transient or sort of a brief period of aphasia because you're suffering from an acute injury like a stroke or a seizure or something along those lines, treating that immediate concern may help rectify the situation. But if you find that after you do that, there's still lingering aphasic issues, you can participate in speech-language therapy and sort of work with a trained professional on improving and modifying your speech patterns to sort of get back to a functional baseline. You can engage in some nonverbal communication therapies. There are many electronic apps and recommendations that you can download that can help you communicate as you rehabilitate, or if you feel like you're sort of reached a plateau and you're not going to be able to rehabilitate further, you can use them and rely on them for greater communication. Group therapy for patients and families to help people learn how to communicate more effectively. So aphasia can get better over time depending upon the circumstances. But there are some people that can be left with a mild, moderate, or even a severe or progressive loss of language abilities, just depending upon what the core etiology is.
Well, Tim, before we part, is there any aspect of this disorder that we haven't touched on that you would want our listeners to know about?
I think it would be important to sort of discuss maybe quickly some of the symptoms that you may notice in other people, and also a few brief statistics, because as you know, I'm such a big fan of good psychoeducation. So the big symptoms that you could be on the lookout for would be someone having a reduced output of speech, maybe the prosody or the rhythm of their speech pattern is changing, they're making word substitutions that they wouldn't normally be making. The flow, the stress, the syllables that they're using sort of stop making sense. They're having difficulty naming common objects, or even someone who used to be able to speak in a grammatically correct fashion is sort of struggling to do so. And if it's not attributable to an immediate identifying cause, like an intoxication or something like that, you'd want to get that evaluated. The National Aphasia Association did a survey in 2016, and they found that 84.5% of people had never heard the term aphasia. And the other one that was very concerning to me was that 31% of people who took the survey agreed or responded neutrally to the statement, a person who has speech difficulties must also have intellectual disabilities. And that's simply not true. Aphasia can strike anybody based upon the, you know, whatever circumstances. And there's nearly 1 million people living in the United States with some sort of aphasia. About 180,000 people will acquire aphasia every year. So learning more about this condition, learning that it is not linked to having an underlying intellectual disability, learning that sometimes people require additional accommodations to communicate, and that it's entirely possible that even though they may not be able to communicate fluently back to you, they may be understanding what you're saying 100% intact. So you should not make assumptions, and you should make sure you're putting in the effort and time to accommodate people's communication styles and how best you can communicate with them.
My thanks today to Dr. Timothy Anger, Assistant Professor of Neurology at UK and faculty member in the Kentucky Neuroscience Institute, for talking with us about aphasia. For more information, visit our website at wuky.org. With health news you can use, I'm Dr. Greg Davis on Medicine.
Dr. Greg Davis is a forensic pathologist at the University of Kentucky who volunteers his time to cover important medical news for our community. This program is available as a podcast at wuky.org.